With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Coming to you from Classic City,
the capital of the Bulldog Nation,
it's time for another edition of the podcast designed for the most die-hard Georgia fans in the country.
Here are your hosts,
Tyler and Curtis.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another edition of the Glory UGA podcast. I'm Tyler, and back with me today, fresh off law school final exams. I think you have at least one more, though, right, Kurt?
Yeah, one more to go through.
One more. So almost through the infamous law school final exams is my co-host Curtis. So Kurt, for all of us who've never experienced law school, give us one word to describe what the last couple of weeks have been for you.
It's a grind. I think that's the best way to say it.
Grind. Yeah. It's got to be. I mean, like, obviously, most of us went through, if you went to college, you've gone through the final exam schedule and like just like your undergrad, maybe master's degree, whatever, but law school, is it really true, like a crazy different animal from like your undergrad final exams?
Yeah, just the feeling of where your whole grade's that one exam.
And your entire future is at stake.
Yeah, more
right? All that, yeah, that's tough. But all right, I know you're almost over, man, so good luck the rest of the way. I know you have one final left, like we said, so I don't want to waste any of your time. I know you got plenty of other things to be doing right now, so we appreciate you being on the show today. So let's go ahead and get right to business. And with Curtis back today, we thought we'd just have some fun today. Life's been, like he said, a grind for him. So we just want to have some fun today on the show. And we're going to do an old throwback episode where we just play some buy or sell. Simple enough, right? For those of you who have been with us for a while, going back to the old Dog Sports Radio days, which feels like forever ago, you know we used to do this pretty often in the offseason. We don't really do it as much anymore, or really ever, because basically we've expanded coverage of other Georgia sports during the football offseason. And as the show's grown, we've got a lot more listener questions than we used to get. So we try to answer all of those, or at least as many as we possibly can. So that means something's always going to get left out. I guess it ended up being the buy or sell episode. So again, we don't do this as much, but maybe if you guys like it, we'll try to bring it back more as the season approaches when we get more and more into the summer months. So again, the premise is simple. I'm not going to insult your intelligence. You guys know how this works. I'm going to just give Curtis a take. He's going to tell me whether he is buying or selling that take. That's all it is. Pretty simple. Still fun. So let's go ahead and get right to it, Curtis. And look, I know that we've already recapped the NFL draft, but we're going to stick with the draft theme for just one more episode. This time, though, a little bit different. Instead of looking back at the 2021 draft again, we're going to more so kind of be looking ahead at the 2022 NFL draft and how things might or might not look for the Georgia Bulldogs this time next year. So starting us off here, Kurt, we are all obviously very excited that JT Daniels is our unquestioned quarterback one, QB1 going into the season. Kirby has kind of done his unprecedented thing and named him the starter, more or less. He basically said he's the starting quarterback going into the 2021 season. And we all believe, we hope at least, that JT is going to be an upgrade over what Kirby Smart has had at that position to this point in his career as the head coach of Georgia. But just how good Daniels will be, that still remains to be seen. We all have high hopes, but we don't know. We don't know for sure. We'll find out. So, Curtis, let's just give JT the benefit of the doubt when it comes to this first take. So, number one here, Curtis, on my list, buy or sell, JT Daniels will be the first overall pick in the 2022 NFL draft. Are you buying or selling that?
I'm going to sell it. As much as I think that he actually is probably one of the best quarterbacks, I'm probably going to sell it with the fact that I'm looking more towards Sam Howell. The biggest thing with JT is the knee.
Yeah, it's the injury concern.
The injury concern. They're not sure. I think one of the big things that held him back this year of going pro was, would he have even passed the physical if he had gone to the draft? And yeah, I think that's going to be the biggest thing that may prevent him from going number one. I mean, outside of him, I think I mentioned Sam Howell, and then the other, Spencer Rattler. He's a guy who can make a big jump with his skill set, similar to Kyler Murray, per se. And just going into the season, those would be the three, I would say, that are going in competing for that number one spot.
I think you're exactly right. The injury issues are going to be the biggest issue plaguing him when it comes to NFL draft. I mean, just look at Azeez Ojulari, right? We all, like, everyone thought he was going to be a first-round pick. He was a first-round grade.
Yeah, and not – I mean, process. You saw him going – when he didn't get drafted in the first round, you expected the first three to five picks in the second round, and you saw what he slid because of the Todd Gurley – you know, what Gurley's faced with the arthritis.
Like degenerative knee issues, essentially what it is with the arthritis. And it might be nothing. Azeez might not have any issues, but it's the fear that you've seen. Like Todd Gurley was on – like, he's not going to make the Hall of Fame now, but he was kind of on that trajectory early in his career, and then he just fell off so quickly and so significantly with the knee injuries. And so that scares teams off investing money in a guy, like, especially talking about potential first-round draft pick, quarterback. We have other options mentioned, like Sam Howell, Spencer Rattler from Oklahoma. We have other options who maybe aren't that far off if they're similar. If you grade them in a similar fashion, JT, you might want to go with a guy that doesn't have the injury issues. And maybe JT's injury issues will be a thing of the past. Maybe. But like Azeez tore his ACL in high school, guys. And he still was having the arthritis coming off of that. And we know how catastrophic – I mean, JT himself used the word catastrophic in an interview this spring when talking about his injury. So that certainly is going to be an issue. And maybe it just takes one team to be willing to overlook that. But if you got the number one pick, you don't want to blow that. So is it the safest pick? I don't know. And then you mentioned some of the other potential candidates. Obviously, Sam Howell, Spencer Rattler. Spencer Rattler's like, I think that's based on the fact that he's going to put up huge numbers at Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's the best quarterback. It's just the whole
thing. He wasn't great last year. He was good. He wasn't like the level that we're accustomed to at Oklahoma, although he was younger than most of the guys that Lincoln Riley has worked with. He wasn't a grad transfer, for instance, you know, or a transfer guy in his final year like Jalen Hurts. He wasn't that kind of guy. So he's still growing. It's just kind of different for Lincoln Riley. But he's got the skill set. He's got receivers. He's got weapons. He's in the offense. He's going to put up numbers. We know that. Sam Howell, I mean, he's going to be in that conversation, no doubt. I mean, honestly, here's what I would say maybe goes in favor or it works in JT's favor. I went and crunched the numbers. 17 of the last 22 first round or number one overall picks were quarterbacks. There's only been five since the year 2000. From 2000 to 2021, so there's been five number one overall picks that weren't quarterbacks. You had three defensive ends and two offensive tackles making up those five that weren't quarterbacks. So basically what you have, this is why I always say quarterback is the most important position on the field. In the last 22 drafts, you've either had a guy that – a quarterback himself – that's selected number one overall, or a guy that affects the quarterback in the pass rusher, or a guy that protects the quarterback in the left tackle. It's all about the quarterback. That's why I say it's always the most important position. So the fact that he's a great quarterback, that certainly helps him. You go to the offensive line. Who could be the options offensive line? Maybe Evan Neal from Alabama? Maybe. I haven't seen that from him yet to say he merits being the number one overall pick, but maybe he has a big year. That's possible. Pass rushers, I mean, I don't know if there's like maybe – George Karloftis from Purdue, who missed most of last year, had a big freshman year. I mean, he's a name people talk about. DeMarvin Leal, who's not really an edge rusher. He's more of an interior guy, but he's a freakish athlete on the interior for Texas A&M. Maybe one of those guys. Maybe Kayvon Thibodeau from Oregon fits that bill. I don't know. So there's other potential options there. And if you have other options that the front offices look at as maybe not that far off in terms of their grade from JT, I think they're probably going to go with them. Let's say the injury is not an issue. I think it will be. I'm with you. Let's say it's not. I think can JT be the number one overall pick? I think that depends on how much we let him do. Like if we really do open up the offense and let's say he breaks Georgia's single season passing records, he shatters Aaron Murray's record, which I think is like a little over 3,800 yards in a single season. And let's say he puts up like Joe Burrow type numbers from 2019, where he's thrown for 4,500 to 5,000 yards, 40 to 50 touchdowns, then yeah, he'll certainly be in that conversation. Maybe that leads a team to overlook the potential injury concerns, but he's going to have to put up those kind of numbers, and we're going to need to win and win big. And by win big, I mean win titles. I think we'll be in the title conversation. I think we'll put up better numbers offensively than we have in a long time, but like it's still the Georgia offense. And I'm still going to need to see it to believe that. So I'm with you, Curtis. I'm going to sell this. I would love to buy it. It'd be awesome to have JT as number one overall pick. But right now, I think there's the red flag of the injuries and other guys are going to put up bigger numbers with Howell and Rattler. So I'm definitely going to sell this. I think he could potentially be a top 10 pick. But number one, I don't know if I'm saying that right now. Hope I'm wrong. But all right, let's move on here. As we laid out earlier in the week, Georgia has been more successful in the NFL draft over the past three seasons than anyone not named Alabama or Ohio State, despite all the trolls out there that want to say Kirby Smart cannot develop talent. But we have still yet to have more total draft picks than Alabama in any one NFL draft while Kirby Smart has been our head coach. So the next take here, Curtis, is that Georgia will surpass Alabama in total draft picks for the first time under Kirby Smart in the 2022 NFL draft. Are you buying or selling?
I'm going to buy that because I think that was the year that Saban kind of dropped to 6 or 7, if I remember correctly. But I think the biggest
drafts
thing,
we're talking about 16, 17, 18 draft recruiting classes have been draft eligible. We just now are getting to the top class under Kirby Smart.
Yeah, and here's the thing too is, especially when you look at Alabama, they don't have the upperclassmen that jump off at you right now. Right. Offensively, I think Evan Neal and John Metchie. Right now, that's all I think offensively. Now they may have other guys, but you also have an underclassman quarterback, so you're not going to have the quarterback making the jump. Trey Sanders has never done anything at the running back position. So, I mean, the offensive line, of course, they recruit well. But I'm trying to think of guys who have experience that are ready to go. And then you look defensively. They started a lot of young guys last year. So I think that maybe in the defensive backfield would be the only place you see it. But
Jordan Battle
right now compared to – yeah, Battle and people like that. But even then, like the people in the star position and Lou Surtain and other things like that, they've got a lot of young guys in there. I mean, Christian Harris would probably be a pick. But outside that, I don't see a lot.
All right, so I've got – all right, let me run through the guys that I think will probably get drafted of our team. Tell me if you think I'm missing somebody or tell me if you disagree with any of these names. So it's a no-brainer. Jordan Davis is getting drafted. Adam Anderson's getting drafted. Quay Walker's getting drafted. N'Kobe Dean's getting drafted. Devontae Wyatt. Nolan Smith, if he leaves, we don't know. If he has the kind of year we want him to have, he'll probably leave. If he leaves, he'll get drafted. Lewis Cine, I don't know if he'll leave, but he'll probably get drafted late.
He'll probably leave. He's got a family.
Yeah, I think he'll probably – yeah, right. So I think he'll probably leave. Jamari Salyer is going to get drafted. JT Daniels is going to get drafted. Zeus is going to get drafted. James Cook, George Pickens, Justin Schaefer. I have a question mark in my notes as to Schaefer. I don't know. Maybe.
We know my opinion on.
Yeah, I know. We all – yeah, and like I don't know. But we'll see what happens there. Kyaris Jackson is going to get drafted. Trevon Walker, if he leaves early, which I think he probably will, he'll get drafted. So – other than Schaefer, do you disagree with any of those?
Outside just those guys, no.
All right, those that I just mentioned, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 guys, okay? Now, again, Trevon Walker might not leave. Lewis Cine might not leave. Nolan might not leave. We don't know. But if you take those guys out, you're still talking about 11 or 12 guys that are going to get drafted. That's going to shatter the record that we set this year. Right, because again, we're just now getting to Kirby Smart's most talented classes, and the reason
we throw in people like Tyke Smith who are going to be transferred,
sure,
and stuff like that.
That's a great one. I didn't think about that. Tyke Smith. Who else are we missing here? Like, I feel like I'm missing somebody.
I think Chris Smith will be similar to DJ Daniels, so I would put him in.
If he has a big year, he could potentially have a shot, but I don't know. That one's kind of up in the air. If D-Rob catches 40 balls, but I don't see that happening. I think it's safe to say anywhere between like 11 to 15 players that could get drafted from this Georgia team, and that's going to shatter our records. Now let's look at Alabama. I got their depth chart here, and I know this is all in flux right now. We don't know, but there's, like you mentioned, John Metchie. He's going to get drafted. Evan Neal's clearly going to get drafted. Jaleel Billingsley, the tight end, probably going to get drafted, right?
Yeah.
I think Billingsley's going to get drafted. That's three there. Brian Robinson, I mean, he's a solid back, but has he jumped off the page to you ever?
Never, but I mean, they find a way to some team.
Yeah, it's an Alabama guy, so I'm sure Bill Belichick and the Patriots will draft him. So let's say that's four guys on off offense off the top of my head here. And I'm sure somebody else will jump up and have a big year, but those are the guys you look at right now. Yeah, they'll probably get drafted. Now, defensively, I would say LeBryan Ray probably somewhere. Mm-hmm. DJ Dale probably somewhere, not high, but somewhere. So that's six. Fedarian Mathis probably somewhere. Will Anderson, Christian Harris. Oh, Will Anderson, no, he's not draft eligible. Christian Harris will probably get. Well, he'll get drafted definitely. He might be a first rounder. So that's seven. Christopher Allen probably. That's eight. Jordan Battle. That's nine. Josh Jobe. You think maybe?
Yeah, I could see it.
Yeah, so that's 10, maybe Daniel Wright at safety. So they're right around that 10 or 11 mark too. I just think we have more guys in this particular upcoming 2020.
I think we're also looking to add some impact guys in the transfer portal, which would help our numbers because most of those guys are going to be upperclassmen.
Yeah, we've got room too, and we need it. Especially now, we'll bring it to it later, but with Major Burns transferring out, like, yeah, we need those bodies. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to buy this. I think that we're going to have more overall draft picks for the first time under Kirby Smart than Alabama next year. I think it's going to happen. I mean, I'm dead serious. I don't see any way that we have less than 11. I just don't see how that's possible unless someone dies. And I mean, knock on wood, let's hope that doesn't happen. Like, I don't see this is going to happen. So yeah, I'm definitely going to buy this.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
All right, let's stick with that theme, Kurt. Let's take it one more step here. We also have yet to surpass Alabama in first-round draft picks in any single draft under Kirby Smart. So the next one here, Georgia will surpass Alabama in first-round draft picks for the first time under Kirby Smart in the 2022 NFL draft. So we're going to narrow our focus here, Curtis. Will we have, buy or sell, will we have more first-round picks than Alabama next year?
I'm going to buy that. I think very well we could easily have two, just at linebacker position, have two first-round picks.
100%. I think Jordan Davis. I think Jordan Davis is a potential first-round pick if he came out this year.
Well, yeah, how thin it was the defensive line. But I think Jordan Davis easily could. And I think Quay and Nakobe both very well could. The way Quay seemed to have picked up the defense, and he has the build, the speed, everything you want in an inside linebacker, which people 100%. Already respect how we produce at the inside linebacker position.
Totally
and
agree.
Then George, if he comes back, and there's people have been mentioning that he now looks like he'll be back. Just, you know, we don't know when. But if he comes back and puts some numbers up, teams will be more willing to draft him high.
Yeah, what's the difference between George being out with injury and a guy like Jamar Chase opting out all of last year? There's no difference. They're just not playing.
Exactly. And honestly, I mean, George has done all that without Devontae Smith and Waddles getting attention.
Yeah, yeah, he's been the guy, especially last year. So that's four right there. And maybe – and who knows if Adam Anderson has the kind of year that we hope he has rushing the passer, he could potentially vault into that.
You could have an offensive lineman sneak in there the way we produce.
Jamari Salyer, if he plays guard, is more natural position. Could he potentially slide in the first round?
Yeah, that's exactly. Someone like that.
Yeah, so I'm looking at – I mean, look, we don't know how things shape out. When you're talking about projecting draft – like this time last year, people were talking about Jamie Newman being a first-round draft pick, right? Yeah. This time 2 years ago, people were talking about J.R. Reed being a first-round draft pick.
Richard LeCount?
And Richard LeCount, right? Richard LeCount, JR, a couple years ago. And that obviously did not happen. So, you know, take it for what it is. But, I mean, seriously, Jordan Davis is almost certainly, barring injury, going to be a first-round draft pick. I think Nakobe Dean, Quay Walker, certainly first-round conversation. Adam Anderson, depends on what kind of year he has. If he has first-round-type talent, it takes one team to be interested in what he does. He can play in space. He's versatile. That's an NFL-type player. We've seen guys similar to him, like Leonard Floyd, get drafted in the first round, right? George Pickens, certainly in the conversation. Stallier, if he has a big year at guard. All of those guys could be drafted in the first round. And you look at Alabama, I mean, okay, well, yeah, Evan Neal is going to get drafted in the first round. So I hear some people talking about John Metchie. I'm sorry, man. I know they have the Bama bump at wide receiver, and those guys, they have just the legacy of wide receiver. I get that. Has John Metchie struck you as a first-round draft pick at this point?
Not doing it on his own.
Yeah, I need to see him do it on his own. Maybe he'll impress me. Maybe he'll take that step. I don't know. I haven't seen him on his own yet. But I don't know. Maybe Gelo Billingsley at tight end, maybe one of those new age type tight ends, could sneak in the first round if he has a big year. If you look at the defense, I don't really – I mean, maybe Jordan Battle at safety, maybe. But outside of those guys, I don't know who's going to be in their first round for Alabama this year. I just don't. So I think it's – I mean, honestly, I'd put some money on it right now. I think Georgia will. I think we will have – more first-round draft picks in Alabama next year. I'm buying that for sure. All right, let's go. You know, I had one more on the NFL draft. I know we're not running quite out of time yet, but I want to make sure that we get time to cover some of the more topical things that have been going on. So we'll come back to what I had. If we have time, we'll come back to that later. I was going to talk about the SEC East versus SEC West and where they got drafted. We'll see if we can come back to that later on. But there's some more things that I want to focus on here because we've got some headlines that have been coming out recently around the Georgia football program. So we want to get to some of these headlines that have been happening recently. And last Friday is where we're going to start. We've got our most recent commitment from former Brookwood wide receiver, Denylan Morissette. I think that's how you pronounce his first name. He's a 6'1", 200-pound wide receiver, ranked number 231 overall, and is Georgia's first true wide receiver commit in the 2022 class. I say true because a guy like Malachi Starks, he could potentially play wide receiver. I would love to see him a wide receiver. We'll see how that – he'll probably play defense. But we talked a lot about Curtis over the past year or so, how important the wide receiver position has become in modern college football and how much we personally need game changers at that position. So, Curtis, let's just start with an optimistic view of Morissette's potential. So, buy or sell – Denylan Morissette is a future alpha number one wide receiver at the college level.
I think he is. The thing that I like most about him is his size. I think he's got the frame to put the weight on. He's already 6'2", and he runs really, really well, and he's also very fluid for that size. So I just think he has the frame to add the weight to become the man. It's all right there. I mean, the guy has has all the attributes you look at. His speed, he's fluid, he's a great route runner, he's got good hands. He's elusive when he gets the ball, and I think just like I mentioned, I think the one thing all he needs to do is just put some weight on.
Absolutely. He's we've said this before, like we're Gwinnett County products, right? So we're familiar with that.
Yeah, and you know how if being from Gwinnett, it's very surprising to get a wide receiver recruit from Brookwood if you know the old days.
Yes. Yeah. You know, if you know the old Brookwood High School, they just run the football, 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 maybe pass once, run the football, run the football, run the football some more, right? Things have changed, not just at the college level, but also the high school level. And they've certainly opened the playbook up there at Brookwood, and Morissette was a big part of that. I think he's now at North Cobb. I think he's transferred out. I think that's the case.
Heard that. I haven't seen anything for sure, but yeah.
Yeah, I think because he wasn't originally from Georgia. He transferred into Brookwoods. I heard that he's at North Cobb now. Again, I can't confirm that, but that's what I've heard. But yeah, so I've seen this guy play quite a few times, like actually seen him play. And this guy's legit. Okay, I'm going to tell you, he's legit. I know Sam Mbake gets a lot of conversation too, the other receiver at Brookwood. He's really, really good. I always liked Morissette better. What about you, Kurt?
I do too. I think like if you watch the games, Mbake was the first one that we offered and the one that you kind of saw, like heard most about, but then you watched the game, you're like, wait, who's this other guy showing out instead of
because he transferred in? And it's like, whoa, where'd this guy come from? I thought Mbake was the guy. And it's like, no, Morissette is that's the dude right there. And Mbake is really good. I'd love to have him too on the commit list. But Morissette's he's the guy that I've been more impressed with watching him over the past year. And you're right, I like the size. He's 6'1", 6'2-ish. He's grown a little bit, about 200, 205. So he's got a little thickness to the frame. And you're right, I think he's got more room to add on to that frame. He's got a physicality to his game. I agree, Curtis. I'm going to buy this as well. I think here's what I would say about Morissette. Can he be a true alpha number one? I think the answer is yes, he can be. He has the tools to do it. But you never know. It, of course, depends on him and how he approaches his development going into the next level. Because there's plenty of guys that have the tools that just never develop because they just, for whatever reason, doesn't click. They don't put the work in, whatever. We don't know. We'll see how it transpires. I hope to God it'll be the case. But he has the tools to do it. You hear a lot of like A.J. Brown comparisons when you talk about him. And I see a little bit of that with the size comparison, certainly. I also see like in his skill set. I'm going to go back a couple years to Ohio State. K.J. Hill. Remember him, Curtis? K.J. Hill from Ohio State?
He's in the NFL somewhere now.
Yeah, and I think his game is somewhat similar to him. He's a really good route runner. He's got good speed, but not like a home run type burner. But he's an extraordinarily fluid wide receiver, just an incredibly smooth athlete. And that's how he creates separation. He's got good speed. He can separate from guys with speed. But really how he creates separation is his route running ability, his ability to get in and out of breaks, those kind of things. He's a really advanced route runner for that stage in his development. And then you mentioned he's thicker, plays physicality, plays through contact. He can run the entire route. You see him run a variety of routes, not just one thing. Because a lot of times you see these wide receivers, they just run go routes, and they're just bigger, faster, stronger than the DBs out there, and they just go up and win jump balls and make big plays. And that's great. It's awesome that you can do that. But if you're trying to project to the next level, I want to see you do more than that. And we have seen Morissette do more than that consistently. He can win at the top of the route and do all that stuff. But we see him do a lot of things that you need wide receiver to do at the next level. And I think he can be that type of wide receiver. I mean, look at Devontae Smith last year at Alabama. Like, Devontae Smith's not physically the most dominant player, but that dude was incredibly good in and out of breaks, a fluid athlete, and just an incredible, just did all the little things right, the wide receiver, a polished player. And Morissette is kind of in that vein, not a carbon copy of Devontae Smith, but they're kind of in that vein, and that's how he creates separation. So, yeah, I think he can be. Remains to be seen, but yeah, I'm very, very excited about this commitment. I think he's better than number 231 overall player. We'll see where he ends up when it's all said and done. Now that, you know, things are kind of opening up, you can get out on the recruiting trail and these analysts can go out and see camps and watch guys in person. I think he'll start moving up the rankings more than he did last year with the COVID year. So very excited about him. But let's move on here, Curtis. On the other end of the spectrum, we also had a decommitment earlier this week from outside linebacker Donovan Westmoreland, who decommitted from Georgia and has now committed to South Carolina. Now, of course, all the South Carolina fans are going to be flapping their gums, talking about, oh man, we flipped this guy from Georgia. Look, like we're on the come up, man. Yeah, we got Shane Beamer here. He's getting it done. He's beating Kirby for recruits. You're hearing that right now. So, Curtis, let's buy or sell. South Carolina flipped Donovan Westmoreland. Is that how this went down?
No, not at all. You don't flip. You don't decommit and flip in one day that quickly unless, like, hey, we didn't put up a fight for you.
Yeah. When you're looking at this guy, okay, first off, he's listed as an outside linebacker. And if that's where we indeed recruited him, he's not playing right now. Now, he can grow. We'll see. He is far too small to play outside linebacker at the next level. He's 6'1", 210 pounds. And if you turn on the tape and watch his highlights, that doesn't even do justice. He looks like he's about 185 pounds. Now, he's a good athlete. He's a really good high school football player. I mean, he's an impressive player at the high school level at Griffin. But we're talking about projecting, right? And projection to the next level, that can be tough. And that's what coaches are taxed to do. And that's a tough thing to ask a coach to do because you don't know how these guys are going to grow. You know, from the junior year to their freshman year in college, their junior year in college, you just don't know how that's going to transpire. Now, he could end up being really good. He could be one of those guys who look back a couple years and, man, what was Georgia thinking? They missed on this guy. But when you're looking at Donovan Westmoreland, taking him as a potential outside linebacker, there's a lot of risk involved there. Now, he, again, could be really good. But I think it's far more likely now, based on his size at this point, that he isn't really a Georgia caliber outside linebacker based on his size. Now, he could grow, but right now where he is, he's not there. And teams like South Carolina, they have to take risk on guys like this, whereas we do not. We have the recruiting chops. Call me arrogant if you want, but it's just reality. We have the recruiting chops to be able to land guys that have less risk associated with them at the outside linebacker spot than Donovan Westmoreland does. That's just reality. And this, honestly, it's not even really speculation. I know South Carolina fans want to call it sour grapes, and Georgia doesn't want to buy it that we beat them on this guy. But just look at his own words on social media. If you pull it up on social media, I came here. I don't have my phone with me right now. It's on my phone. I got it. I can take a picture of it. But he put something out there like they're going to pay for their decision. Like basically, he made it pretty clear with his own tweets on social media that we Billy Bobbed him, that we basically told him, like, you know what, it might be better if you look somewhere else. We have somebody else that we have hired on our list and now wants to commit. That, to me, looks like what happened here. I mean, that's the bottom line. A guy that's in the, you know, he's a 3-star in the 600 or three, depending on what service you look at, he's in the 300 to 600 range in terms of overall recruiting in the country. So Yeah, look, good for South Carolina. He's a good player, but I think it's far more likely that we Billy Bobbed him and said, hey, man, look, thanks. We appreciate it. We're sorry to do this, but we're going to move on from you. We hope you look somewhere else and find another home. And that's kind of what I think happened here. And certainly based off what he said on social media, what he put out there, that seems pretty clear that's what happened here. So, yeah, I'm not too worried about South Carolina coming in and flipping recruits and beating us for guys. That's just – I don't see that happening. Just don't see it happening. All right, let's move on here, Curtis. As is becoming far more common than ever before with the new changes in NCAA legislation regarding penalty-free transfers, we have had our first post-spring attrition as defensive back Major Burns announced earlier in the week that he will be entering his name in the transfer portal. We did get a couple of questions about Burns this week, all with the same major theme. So we're kind of lumped them together here. And that theme is, how big of a loss is this, losing Major Burns? So Curtis, would you buy or sell the idea that Georgia fans should classify Major Burns' transfer as a major loss?
I'm going to sell it just because I don't like the word major. I think that word brings too much significance into it. I think it's a big loss, but I think there's a fine line between a major and a big. Like, I just think major is too much emphasis on it. I think it was a big loss because it hurts. I think it hurts depth wise. As we saw last year, we may need pieces like that when it comes to depth. But the reason I don't categorize it as a major loss is it's not Chris Smith. It's not Lewis Seen.
It's not a starter this year.
It's not the guys we have penciled in to start. And right now, if Latavius Breeny stays, you still have Latavius Breeny who can play star, which gives you the ability to also use Tyke Smith at either star or either safety position where he has played in the past.
Great point. Absolutely. You're right. I love what you're saying there. I think no pun intended here, okay? I didn't even attend this. I'm looking at my notes here now. Major Burns, major loss. I didn't even attend that. I'm an idiot. I don't think it's a major loss. I think it could potentially be a big loss. Here's the thing. You're right, Curtis. Like, we don't know, will Major Burns ever turn into an SEC starter? Maybe. We hoped he would develop into that, and I had high hopes for him, but we don't know that yet. We know that our starters this season at safety, barring any injuries, are going to be Lewis Seen and Chris Smith. And Major Burns, like, it's important to have a two deep and have depth. He was going to be in that two deep, but he wasn't going to be a starter. And maybe he would be next year, but we don't know. But it does reduce our margin for error, certainly at that position. And we're already thin in the defensive backfield in general. And next year might even be more stark, especially at safety. Because next year you're looking at safety and you're like, okay, well, if Lewis Seen goes pro, Chris Smith leaves as a senior. Next year we've got David Daniel and I don't know at safety. Maybe Malachi Starks, maybe. Now, I will also say this. Here's another reason why I don't think it's like a major loss. It's a loss. Like, you'd love to have this guy. We don't have a ton of depth in the secondary. We need depth back there. But next year, if you're looking at like this being a loss for next year, I get why somebody might say that. Well, next year, this guy is going to be a starter. Maybe. We don't know that. And also, the transfer portal, along with our national profile from a recruiting standpoint, that may make this less of an issue than maybe it would have been years past. Does that make sense, Curtis?
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing. Like, who knows? At this point in time, we could still bring someone in our own right and it not even be a loss. So imagine what it could be if
we're
going to
offer guys that are hitting the transfer portal now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this next week or two is going to be a big – it's almost like moving season. Like, at the mat, you know, like the golf. It's like the Saturday of golf.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and look, you're right. We said earlier, we have spots open on this roster right now. We have – on our 85, we have some spots open. So I firmly expect it to be big players down the stretch here going into fall camp, trying to get guys out of the transfer portal. We'll see how that – and now we have another need at safety. So we're going to need to bring somebody in, whether it's a cornerback, a safety, just somebody that can play anywhere in the secondary. Guy, it's kind of a jack-of-all-trades back there. We need more – we just need bodies right there at that point. At this point in the secondary, we need bodies. So, yeah, I mean, it's a loss. I don't sit here and say, oh, my God, you know, it's no problem. Who cares? Like, no, we need bodies back there. I think this guy could grow into a good player, but it's not like some significant loss like we're going to need to freak out about. I don't think at that point, because we just don't know what this guy's going to turn to yet. All right, and finally, I think we got time for one more here, Curtis. Let's leave the gridiron and head over to the hardwood for our final topic of today's episode. College basketball itself, it has become one giant game of musical chairs every offseason now, with massive reshuffling of rosters thanks to the portal and immediate eligibility. That combination, it's been tough for college basketball. And this year, the Georgia basketball team has been a very enthusiastic participant in the annual music chairs competition, with, as of right now, and it could certainly end up being more, as of right now, 8 new players set to join the team for the 2021-22 season. A lot of fans, Curtis, and you've been with them. And I've been back and forth on it. I've kind of, you know where I stand on this. But a lot of fans have been calling for Tom Crean's head after losing 2 of the big 3. Because we knew we were going to lose some guys to the transfer portal, but the 3 guys, I think we all kind of went in this offseason saying we couldn't lose, were Tamani Kamara, Sevier Wheeler, and Katie Johnson. Well, Tamani Kamara, Sevier Wheeler, they're both gone. Katie Johnson, as of right now, is the only one left standing of that big 3. So a lot of people are upset and just want Tom Crean gone immediately. But I'll say this. I'm not so sure we haven't upgraded the roster heading into next season. So, Curtis, I'm going to put it to you. Buy or sell, Georgia basketball will have a better roster next year than what we had this year.
I think we will. I think our roster was just that.
It was terrible.
Terrible last year. Yeah.
We had 3 guys and then a bunch of, okay.
Yeah, find the right appropriate word. We didn't. Like, outside those 3 guys, we had absolutely nothing. And I think we added some good pieces, especially the Virginia transfer. Some of these other guys, I think, can come in and make an impact. To me, the biggest loss is actually Kamara. I mean, as good as Xavier Wheeler was, he was also a huge liability. Like, I would like to see his plus-minus while he was on the court, just for the fact of how many points he gave up. The guy refused to play defense. Cost us a lot on the shot. Yeah, exactly, and so I think that you could actually upgrade in that position. While it may not seem like it, I think it is possible if you add someone who can just score. I very well could see us being better though overall, because I think the talent may be better across the board. Especially at this point, we still don't know if Kyer or Horn are coming back.
All right, so sell me on. And I was one of those guys that had Tamani Kamara in the big 3 that we couldn't lose, because I liked his potential. But sell me on Tamani Kamara actually being a significant loss. Why is this guy a big loss? What did he do last year? This guy's a big loss.
The reason you didn't see him shine as much as he should have is he was playing out of position. I think that's the biggest thing, is we just didn't utilize his skill set to the best and put him in the best position to be successful. Now, I still think the guy too many times was lazy up and down the court, lazy defensively. And those are things that you hope as you get older that you fix. But I think playing him primarily in the power forward position would have been better for his overall production.
I do think that would help him, certainly. I will give him that. I'll agree with you there. But I'm looking at him like 26% from 3-point land. That's not good enough. Not in modern college basketball.
No, I agree. I mean, that's the thing. But he had improved from where he was. He was a very raw guy when we originally took him. So I think you're banking on him improving more and more.
It was the tantalizing potential of what he could be. But my thing with him is we don't know if he'll ever get to that point by the time he leaves college level. Maybe. Because you see a flash of him, you're like, wow, that guy could be really good. And he could be really good defensively. And he was at times. But he was so up and down, low basketball IQ. Because you're right, he was new to the game. But off the charts athleticism for sure. But like, there was no polish there. I would love for him to still be on the team. But when I look at the guys that we've gotten to replace him, guys like Jalen Ingram from FAU shooting over 40% from 3-point land, Jabri Abdur-Rahim, that you mentioned, the former top 100 recruit from that was a former commit to Virginia. We got him from Virginia. Both those guys are, I think, more polished wings that will perform at a higher level next year than Kamara would if he was on our team. Do you disagree with that?
No, I don't disagree.
Yeah, I think those guys will perform. And I'm not saying their ceiling is as high as Kamara. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, who's going to perform at a higher level next year? I think both Ingram and Abdur-Rahim will perform at a higher level than Kamara next year. I just believe that because they're more polished and they're just more advanced right now than Tamani Kamara is. And one thing I also think we did is we did a really good job of addressing needs. We've got guys that can shoot. That was a huge need for us last year. Jalen Ingram, Noah Bauman coming in. Now, defensively, he might be a liability for us coming out of USC. But 2 years ago, they got shot over 45% from 3. That's big. We needed size. We go and get Baylon Bridges from Illinois, Chicago, 6'10", can actually play center. So I think we've addressed some of our needs. I think we've actually upgraded the talent at many spots on the roster. My one big concern here, Curtis, is and look, I'm with you that Sevier Wheeler had flaws. Guy shot, talk about Kamara only shooting 26%. Wheeler shot 22% from 3. Yeah, he had all these great assists. He also was, I think he was top 5. I think he ended up top 5 in the country in turnovers last year. Now, a lot of that's because of usage, sure, but he still turned the ball over far too much. But he was the engine to our offense. Who is going to play point guard for us next year? That's my big remaining question for this team. I think other spots on the roster, we're upgraded. But who is playing point guard for us next year?
And I agree. I think that's the biggest thing, is I need to see someone go out there and be able to be the general. Because I think you can you don't have to be as explosive as him. Because I think teams were actually learning how to play him in general. You know, they stopped, they played off of him, didn't allow him to shoot as much, forcing him to shoot. So if we, that's the question, and I believe that's the biggest question mark that I think too is who's going to lead the offense.
All right, well, and I agree with you. So let me give you a bonus. This is just, I'm just throwing stuff against the wall here. I'm going to give you a bonus one here, all right? One last one to get out of here on. Buy or sell, Katie Johnson will be our starting point guard next year.
I think right now I may buy that, thinking that he's going to have the ball in his hands. I mean, he's such a physical guy. He's actually built like a tank, and when he drives, he can create space and take contact that most people.
And let's look at KD. Let's project him into the NBA. All right. If this guy has any hope of playing the NBA,
too short,
he ain't playing shooting guard. He's 6'1". No. He's not playing shooting guard. Point guard is his only chance to really make it in the league. All right. That's just the reality. So I know he might not be a point guard by trade. He's not the same as Severe, but you've got to sell this guy on, hey, man, if you want to play in the league, you're going to be playing point guard. So you better figure it out. And he's got handles. He can handle the ball. Not at Severe Wheeler's level. And maybe he doesn't have the instincts to play the position. He hasn't done it in as far as I know in his life. But like based on who we have on our roster right now, is there a better option than KD?
Not that we know of.
Yeah, not that I know. It may look we could very well still go out and get somebody. Certainly possible. But I think KD should certainly get a long, long look at point guard for us right now, and also for his own future in the NBA. And I don't know if you saw this, Kirsch. I think it was today, actually. We got another commit from a JUCO. It's a JUCO All-American, actually, Jalen Rignall. I am intrigued by this guy. Like, he didn't have great offers, but I turned on the tape and watched him play. Now, of course, this JUCO competition. I really liked what I saw. He averaged about 21 points a game, 12 rebounds a game last year. He's an undersized forward at 6'6". But the thing is, I think he can play shooting guard. So if you slide KD to point guard, I think Rignall can play shooting guard. He shot 39% from three, 86% from the free throw line. I like those numbers. He can handle the ball, put the ball on the floor, take it to the basket, catch and shoot, shoot out the dribble. He's a good athlete. I think he could play the two potentially, where you have like Jalen Ingram, Abdur-Rahim, those guys playing the three and four. Bauman can be in that conversation somewhere. Baylen Bridges playing center. And you got KD at point guard. I think that could potentially be how our lineup shakes out. So I think that guy's going to come in. Like, I'll say this for Rignall, right? I know if you don't get excited about JUCOs, you look at his offer sheet and you say, man, God, like no one was really after this guy. You can't remember, it's also a COVID year. So that's that, you got to throw that in there. And look, if you compare him to the guys that we took from the JUCO ranks last year, it's night and day. This guy can actually play. Those guys couldn't play. Starks, Jonathan Ed couldn't play. This dude can play, and he's going to play a lot for us next year. So, yeah, I mean, just add it to the list. I think we have upgraded our roster. Now, is it good enough for us to compete at a high level in the SEC and make the tournament? That remains to be seen. I'm not ready to go there yet. But I think we will be better next year if we can just figure out a point guard. I think KD could maybe potentially be that answer there. But all right, guys, that's all we've got time for today. We got to get Curtis out of here. He does have that one last final exam to get through. We have a lot more topics to go through that I had on my list here that I didn't know if we'd have a chance to get through. So we're going to save those. We had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun doing this today. So we'll circle back around in a couple of weeks and get to some of these that we did not get to, maybe add a few more. And hey, if you guys have got any ideas on things you want us to discuss, if we're buying or selling, throw them to us on Twitter at @glory_UGA. You can also email them to us at gloryugapodcast@gmail.com. And we'd love to hear from you guys. We'd love to talk about things that you want to hear us talk about. This show is for you guys. So hit us up. Let us know what you want to hear us discuss, and we'll be happy to do it on the show. Now, last week, I guess the past couple weeks, I've been teasing that May is going to be Scheme Theme Month. And I promise you, it is going to be Scheme Theme Month. We're going to kick that off next week. I was going to try to get an episode in this week, but Curtis was available. His schedule opened up a little bit, so we had to get him back on the show. It's been a week or two, so we had to get him back on. But starting next week, at least once a week, we're going to have a Scheme Theme episode. We've got a lot of you that have already sent in questions that you would like to hear us discuss on the show, some things you'd like us to explore from an X and O standpoint. But we are certainly open to more ideas. Anything that you like, when you hear people talk about the X's and O's of football, anything that you kind of understand but you don't fully understand, things that you think will help you understand the game more, will help make you watching football more enjoyable for you, we would love to be able to break that down for you here in this Scheme Theme Month. We already have a ton of ideas, but the more the merrier. Wow. You guys know I get long-winded with this stuff. I love the nitty-gritty nuts and bolts, X's and O's of football. I love the chalk talk kind of stuff. So we'll be getting to a lot of that the rest of this month. And who knows, if we get enough interest in it, we can definitely carry the scheme theme month into June. Maybe we'll make it a scheme theme summer. We can certainly explore that if that's something you guys would be interested in. So just let us know. Again, that's Twitter at @glory_UGA. You can email us gloryugapodcast@gmail.com. I think I've got a really fun one that we're going to kick things off with next week that I think you guys will find interesting as it relates to Georgia's scheme. And just to give you a little tease there, as it relates specifically to Georgia's run defense dominance over the past couple years, that's where we're going to kick things off. Kind of how does Georgia actually do that? Like, why are we so much better at stopping the run than other teams? Do we just have better players, or is there more to it than that? So we'll explore that and a ton of other stuff over the next month or so with our scheme theme month, or maybe scheme theme summer. We'll see how that goes. But thanks for listening, guys. Really look forward to the rest of this month, the rest of the offseason. I can't wait for the season to get here, but we've got a lot of cool stuff for you. At least I think some cool stuff for you guys the rest of the offseason. But have a great rest of the week, guys. Have a great weekend. Don't forget, men's and women's Georgia tennis teams at home to kick off the NCAA tournament over the weekend. The ladies are kicking things off on Friday afternoon at 1 p.m. I'm having to take a half day off work to get there. I don't care. I'm pumped for this. Can't wait. If they win, which they should, if we lose to Austin Peay, I might lose my mind. So we should win that match. And if we win that one, we'll face the winner of Furman and Wake Forest Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock. The guys kick off the first round Saturday at 1 o'clock, so just before the women. If they win that match against East Tennessee State, then we'll face the winner of Virginia Tech and Texas Tech at 1 p.m. on Sunday. Tickets are available. It's 50% capacity. That's the NCAA championship rule right now, which is actually more than we've been allowing for regular season matches. So this will be a lot of people. And they're only $5 a ticket, guys, for adults. Usually it's free for regular season, but for the NCAA tournament, it is $5. But that's a small price to pay. If you have never been to Athens, even if you've been to like a regular season match, if you've never been to Athens for an NCAA tennis tournament, it is unbelievable, guys. When the Dogs are playing, men's or women's, it is an incredible atmosphere. It's the best atmosphere on campus outside of Sanford Stadium. I am very confident in saying that, especially when you get into the NCAA tournament. It is a madhouse when the Dogs are playing. Even if it's only 50% capacity, who cares? It is an awesome experience. The weather should be nice this weekend. So if you're looking for something to do with the family or just yourself, whoever, get to Athens. Come support our men's and women's tennis teams as they enter the NCAA tournament. And what's not to enjoy about a weekend in the Classic City, the greatest college town in all the land. So come on up, support the team, have a great weekend in Athens. We'll be there having a great time. Hope you guys can make it. We have a couple contenders on our hands. The women are the number 3 overall seed, which basically means if we're equating this to basketball terms, the women are our number 1 seed. If we're doing this like the NCAA basketball tournament, right? We're the number 3 overall seed, which would put us as a 1 seed. The men are the number 11 overall seed, which would put us at a 3 seed if you're equating this to the NCAA basketball tournament, which is something I know you guys are a lot more familiar with. It's a lot easier to follow that because we see it more often than we do the tennis tournament, how they kind of do their bracket. But 64 teams, same concept. Men and women, both contenders. The women have a chance to win it all, guys. They absolutely have a chance to win it all. In 2019, the last tournament before COVID, they lost in the championship match to Stanford, and we had a chance that year, and most of that team is back. They're older, wiser, more experienced. We got a shot, guys. We have an absolute shot, and you do not want to miss your chance. This is it, guys. You've heard me talk about Katarina Jokic on court one for the women, the number 1. Well, she's not number 1 right now, although she dropped from number 1 without losing, which is just a quirk of how they do the college tennis rankings. It's a formula. It's crazy. It's stupid. She's awesome. She's only lost one match all season. She's an All-American. She's incredible. I've said it before, she's the best tennis player, men or women's, that I have seen during my 7 or 8 years of basically going to every single Georgia men's or women's tennis match. She is absolutely incredible. She's so fun to watch. And this is the last chance you're going to have to watch her here in Athens, guys. This is it. After this weekend, the tournament moves to Lake Nona down in Orlando, near Orlando, for the rest of the tournament. So get out. Do not blow your chance to watch. Not just Kat. Kat is awesome, but the rest of the women's team, the men's team as well. We've got a great group of guys, a great group of girls. Come out, support the team, cheer on the Dogs, and experience something that maybe some of you haven't experienced before. I'm telling you, you will not regret it. I wouldn't have believed what I'm saying right now before I had gone to these matches, but trust me, guys, it's as good of an environment that you will find on the Georgia campus outside of Sanford Stadium. I'm telling you. So come experience, get your tickets before they sell out. Hope you guys can make it. But all right, that's enough. Enough of my spiel. I'm out of here. Thanks for listening, guys. For Curtis, I'm Tyler. And as always, go Dawgs!
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.